The MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WinBet. Get started today and you'll get a risk-free bet of up to $500. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. We're also brought to you by Roman. Roman is a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Just head on over to getroman.com/SGP for $15 off your first month. That's getroman.com/SGP. And we're also brought to you by Underdog Fantasy. Underdog Fantasy is home to the Best Ball Mania 2 contest where you can win $1 million. That's right, $1 million. Sign up now at underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And finally, we're also brought to you by Odds Jam. Odds Jam is the betting tool every sharp bettor needs, bringing you the latest prices and presenting the best betting opportunities. Dominate the marketplace with Odds Jam. Use promo code SGP and get 5% off. SportsGamblingPodcast.com/OddsJam.
Thank you for bringing your ear holes to the podcast. It is the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 38. Usually try to dedicate the episode to someone who wore 38. There's not a lot of good options. I'm going to go with Kwame Brown, who is Michael Jordan drafted first overall when he was with the Washington Wizards, and then he bullied him into submission in practice. So basically, it's kind of like how this podcast goes. I'm the Michael Jordan of the podcast, and my associate host is the young, bright-eyed prospect, and I just bully him all episode long and try to make him make picks and whatnot. So that's what you're in store for. I would be Jeff Foster, host. I would be the bully. I would be the Michael Jordan of this, actually, is what I would be. My co-host would be the Michael Jordan of the Gogo Plata, self-described off-air. He claims that's what he is. So you may know me from such places as the Sports Gambling Podcast Network or sportsgamblingpodcast.com, actually, MMA-manifesto.com, my house. I've been here lots because we're still locked down in Canada. I know COVID's it's over in the States, especially in Houston where the UFC was last night, but it's not over here. Actually, Houston, I looked up the numbers and it actually seems to be over there, so I'm jealous. But regardless, I would be your host of this lovely episode and the 37 that preceded it, and I have a savvy associate host, to steal a word that he uses on one of his other podcasts. Like I said, he is the Michael Jordan of the Gogo Plata. He claims to be a better grappler than Jacare Souza.
This is all off air stuff.
He says stuff. And Andre Munez, he says he's a better. And you're not allowed to talk yet. I haven't introduced you yet. This is all off. Like off air, he's a totally different person. So he claims he could tap all these people out. And he usually wishes harm onto if whoever is the nicest fighter on a fight card, he wants them to get beat up. So this past week it was Jordan Wright, who seems to be a very nice guy with this post-fight interviews and stuff, but Dan wanted him to get hurt real bad. People did get hurt, but just not that guy. So this would be Daniel Gumby Vreeland. You may know him from this podcast. You may know him from sportsgamblingpodcast.com, mma-manifesto.com, bunch of other places that I'm not going to talk about because they don't pay me. Top Turtle MMA podcast, he hosts that, and the Prelim Picker, we'll say he hosts that one too. So and we're also known as aka the Mediocre Boys. We are back. We were not mediocre for, it was a nice stretch there, 3 or 4 weeks. We Dan a week or two longer than I, but we were not mediocre, but we are firmly mediocre again after both going 5-7 this past weekend. So after that, I like to do long introductions and keep Dan on the tips of his toes, not knowing when I'm actually going to let him talk. I think I need a drink of water, so we will let him talk. Now, here he is, the master of the Gogo Plata. He says he would have broken both of Jacare's arms last night if he fought him. It's Daniel Gumby Vreeland.
I don't believe I ever said a bad word about Jacare. I don't believe that. I will say I said lots of bad words about Jordan Wright. Before we get into the nasty things I've said about Jordan Wright and wishing him harm, as I did. I do wish nice people harm. He's right about that.
Yeah.
I will say I'm a little bummed you didn't honor either of two of my favorite under the radar pitchers with this episode. Episode 38 definitely belongs to both Ubaldo Jimenez,
right, yeah,
or Carlos Zambrano, who both wore 38.
Yes, I noticed. I saw both their names on there. I can't remember who else I saw that I was thinking about. Dave Andrechok, I was going to dedicate it to, a former a Hockey Hall of Famer. And I think there was another baseball player I was considering, but yeah.
Those two are the under-the-radar pitchers. Those are the ones I like. The guys who, like, had Cy Young candidacy, like, one time, and then the rest of their careers were, like, good enough to be the fourth starter.
Right. We'll see if Dan makes any fantasy baseball moves while we're recording this week like he did last episode. So that's how he's staying firmly in third place in our SGPN. I just noticed the league's called SPGN, that's right. No, they have it spelled wrong. It's SGPN, right?
Yeah, he's got sports gambling podcast.
Yeah, I just realized he's got an SPGN. That's amazing.
That's not good. Like,
in the SPGN. Someone's getting fired after this episode now that I've exposed that. We're mediocre once again after UFC 262, which was not a mediocre event, that's for sure. It was a crazy event. We didn't have any broken legs. We just had one broken humerus.
No, we did have a broken leg. I'm almost positive we had a torn ACL.
Tony Ferguson?
Yeah, I think Tony Ferguson's ACL is torn. I'm almost positive of it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I was just – you stomped all over my corny dad joke I was setting up there, Dan. I was going to say we had a broken humerus, which is not funny, right?
Yay. See what you
did
there.
It's not funny at all.
But it wasn't funny because it made a loud snap, and then they made sure to replay that loud snap for everybody to hear.
Yeah, why does the UFC insist on, if something gruesome happens, they have to replay it, and if someone gets hit in the junk, they have to replay it?
Do you know what I think it's for?
Every time.
I'm almost positive it's for GIF value.
Because yeah, maybe.
I have some phenomenal freeze frames of Chris Weidman's foot on my phone, including one of him going back and stepping on it, and it's just the freeze frame of his, like, wet noodle foot. And it's gross, and I think they want people to have those. I think it's good for branding.
What else is on your phone, Dan, you psycho? I want to hear what else is on there, sick
people,
man.
People who are going to start on Tuesday. I have the possible starters for Tuesday.
See, he's a degenerate.
In a little spreadsheet that I'm ready to use, probably while we're talking tonight. That's pretty much it. I usually keep a list of people who are going to fight coming up who I might interview.
And then a bunch of gifts of injuries.
And then gifts of injuries and junk shots.
I figured junk shots would be on your phone. That's not a surprise. But
can we add that to our list of running hashtags? Hashtag junk
shots. Junk shots. I think now that there's crowds back, the UFC loves playing the replay of the junk shots because that always gets a ooh from the crowd. So
you can tell when they played it in the arena and not on the camera because you can hear the ooh before we get to see it.
Yeah, but it's kind of sexist. If it happens to a female fighter, they do not replay it, and I'm sure it hurts them also because they stop the fight and stuff. But
yeah,
why does it?
And the fans all start booing as if they think it shouldn't hurt, which is just a wild move on down there.
Exactly, exactly. All right, enough talking about junk. Dan always tries to turn this into a smutty podcast talking about guys. He always wants to talk about guys' junks, usually chunky guys' junks. So I think instead we should talk about Bravo chokes and whatever else happened last night. But before we get into that, let me tell you about WynnBET. WynnBET is bringing you the action of real sports betting with the Wynn Las Vegas experience. Get in on all your favorite teams, players, and sports games. Generous promos, odds, and parlays are happening right now at WynnBET. Get started today and you'll receive a special offer of up to $500 risk-free sports bet. Terms and conditions apply. Get the details at wynnbet.com and download the app today. All right. That's do an autopsy. Maybe we can figure out what our problem is. We went 5-7 at UFC 262. Week before, we both went 3-6. So
that's we're in a bit of a – That's improvement.
It's true. We have improved. Before that, we were 8-2 and 9-1. But, yeah, well, we're in a bit of a skid the past couple weeks. So we both went 5-7. Dan lost a little less than I did. I lost $331 because I bet $100 in every fight, obviously. Dan lost $273 or $274. On the year, I am hitting 55%. Dan's hitting 52%, so he's dropped a little bit. Boo. But he's lost less money than me because he hit a big underdog one time.
That's, I think a 275.
275
She's
underdog.
She's got a fight coming up again, by the way.
True. Can't wait.
She took notice fight.
So I'm down 2,800. Dan's down 2,200. We both whiffed on our locks last night, too, which sucked. I actually said out loud, well, at least Dan's lock didn't come through. Like, and I was happy about it, which is not good. At least I don't have pictures of guys getting hit in the junk on my phone. But still, I didn't feel good about wishing bad things on Dan. But that's where this podcast has happened. That's what it's done to me. So we both whiffed on our locks. Dan's was Jamie Pickett, who did not last very long.
He looked really bad.
Yeah, mine was Matt Schnell, who fought a cheater who came in overweight. So that's why he lost. But so locks, I'm 8-2, which is still pretty damn good. Almost up 300 bucks. Dan is back down to 5-5. Very, very mediocre for the mediocre boy. He's down 189 bucks. So, all right, let's break her down. Main event, pretty wild. Main event is pretty wild that Charles Oliveira is the champ after, I think it's been something, I read it was like almost 4,000 days since his first UFC fight, and now he's the champion. Who saw this coming? The guy that, he was known for missing weight at featherweight and for basically looking like he was trying to quit in a lot of fights anytime the going got tough. But going got tough last night, and he definitely did not quit.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that you mentioned that stuff at featherweight. It's just like another one of those clear cases where, like, sucking down to, like, the most low-level weight class you possibly can clearly is not always good. You know what I mean? Like, it's wild that people constantly thought that that was the way to become good, and it's just, it was not at all. Yeah, and like, he was killing himself to make featherweight. He didn't look good down there all the time. I mean, to be fair, he got beat by some really good guys at featherweight, right? Like Cub Swanson and Frankie Edgar and Max Holloway are the ones who beat him down there. And you know, he beat some good guys in his own right, right? Like he beat Jeremy Stephens, Hatsuyuki Hioki. Yeah, he lost to Cowboy Cerrone, but like he was doing good all the time. But like, yeah, he just looks like a whole different person up a weight class. It's crazy to me too. Here's the thing I will say about him is that like, he goes in there as a guy who we largely think of as a jiu-jitsu guy,
right?
And he just reminds us how much better his striking has gotten, because even before he started tagging Chandler, like, things looked right on the feet for him. Like, he looked like he was doing what he intended to do on the feet. And also, I'll say, hey, like, he got a takedown on Michael Chandler, which is something I think a lot of people didn't see him doing.
Right. Last five fights, three of them he's ended with punches. So it's kind of similar to the aforementioned Jacare, who seemed to, like, gain striking power as he aged, not let Chucky Olives is old. He's only 31, despite being in the UFC forever. But yeah, it reminds me of Jacare, a jiu-jitsu ace who added some powerful striking, which kind of makes him unstoppable. But difference being, DeBronx is 10 years his junior, so he's got some time to actually use it and maybe have a little reign here on top of the lightweight class. But of course, after all Dan said about featherweight and stuff and all I said, of course, one of the first things you hear out of him is he would still like to make a run at featherweight if Dana White would let him. He would go down to featherweight and try to win the belt there. So,
well, I remember I'll say this. If I win that lightweight belt right now, and there's and that's the level of challenger that's in that division right now there, I'm probably looking for other divisions to challenge
him
too. You know, like, you really want to fight Dustin Poirier, Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler again, Beneil Dariush. I mean, by then, maybe Gregor Gillespie, Justin Gaethje. And like all of them, like a couple of them in there are nightmare matchups for him, right? Like, you know, Gaethje is who? I mean, like, could you imagine him versus Gaethje? It would be a lot of fun. I've been saying for years, I actually think that Gregor Gillespie is a big problem for a lot of people in that division because of the way he has takedowns and he has a gas tank and stuff like that. I'm not sure how he'd look on his feet against Charles Oliveira, but I'd be interested to see what happens if he tried to wrestle him. So I think there's just so much talent at lightweight. There's never any reason for a lightweight champion to go elsewhere.
No. So, Islam Makhachev also.
Oh, I didn't even mention
He's been making some noise, saying, I'll see you soon. So that would be quite the matchup also. So, yeah, it's a murderer's row, to say the least. So, so for those of you who didn't see the pay-per-view, it started out, striking battle. Chandler's power, obviously, there was a huge power discrepancy in the striking, at least until the second round. He hit Oliveira bad, cut him up bad over his right eye. But DeBronx got him down, worked him on the mat. He actually took Chandler down, as you mentioned. So he basically regained his composure and whatnot. But then early in the second round, he lit what's that guy's name? Chandler. He lit Chandler up on the feet and just like finished him off. It was very, very impressive. I don't know what was more impressive, him lighting him up on his feet or him taking him down. And basically it was all around performance. It was something you wouldn't have seen from him back in the days when it seemed like he wanted out in some of these fights that you're mentioning that he lost. Like if he had got cracked like that in the olden days, he may have been looking for an exit, but he definitely was not last night.
I'll ask you this. What did you think of, so when Chandler popped him right at the end of the first round,
right,
and he fell to his knees and looked like he was looking for like a really desperate takedown because either he was hurt or he felt backed into a corner and didn't know what to do. And then he eventually flipped to his back and kind of pulled guard sort of and just survived there. How close did you think the ref was to stopping that?
Yeah.
I was nervous. Close.
Yep. Yeah, it was very close. I think it was lucky that the round was coming to a close, obviously, saved by the bell, for sure. But yeah, it definitely was close. Chandler did not he made a good account of himself, for sure. He's definitely one of the top lightweights in the world. So he did not look bad at all in there. But yeah, in getting knocked out by Oliveira is not such a bad thing nowadays either, because a lot of guys are getting lit up by him. If you'd said that a few years ago, then you'd be like, oh, I don't know about that guy's chin. But getting knocked up by him is not the worst thing in the world. He's more than powerful enough for the lightweight division. He has been knocked out by featherweight in Bellator, so who's to say?
He also has been knocked out. Well, he's lost by TKO in four straight fights.
Yeah.
With one of them being in that weird ankle injury when he had drop foot. But
right.
But one of them is to Will Brooks too. Like,
right. And that's granted, right. Yeah.
Over a long period of time because he hasn't lost much. But one to a featherweight, one to Will Brooks, one to a jiu-jitsu ace. Like, you're right. I don't know that his chin is cause for concern yet, but he also hasn't been touched by a lot of guys with good power. You know what I mean? Like, his fights before that were Benson Henderson, not typically known as a guy who can flatline you, Sydney Outlaw, Brett Primus, Brandon Gritz, Goichi Yamaguchi, like, all of the names that I'm reading here right now are guys who either grapple first or are known for their like kind of technical striking. So you're right. I don't think we have to write his chin off as being bad, but there is a reason to start talking about it.
No, true. Yeah. When you mention all these smaller guys who have hurt him. And plus, to make matters worse, I hear people floating around his next opponent could or should be Justin Gaethje, which would be bad news for him if he's getting knocked out by some of those guys.
Yeah, although I will say I think that's the most fun violence-y fight that you could possibly make in that debate. Like, it from a stylistic standpoint, anybody who called for that fight is right on.
Violence-y, you said? Is that correct?
Yeah, violence-y. Yeah.
Do you have a degree in anything?
Yeah, I have three,
you want
degrees,
to bring that up?
3 degrees in English.
Oh, really? Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Huh, I didn't know that.
And that's violent C, like S-Y at the end, yeah.
So, interesting. So I guess there's never anything I have to edit in your articles either, right? Because you're an English expert, apparently.
It's flawless. My emails are good, too, if you remember.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so who would you – do you want to see that matchup? You want to see, like, Chandler Gaethje for basically next to next, so second in line, basically? Because it looks like Dustin Connor's next in line.
I think Poirier versus Connor is the clear cut answer for who's next.
And the timing works too. Yeah,
The timing works great. I will just say, with all of the names we mentioned being interesting in that division right now, I don't think there's a wrong answer for Chandler, right? Like, you'd watch him fight Gaethje. You know, you mentioned Islam Makhachev. If somebody wanted to bump him way up, I'd watch that. If you want to put him with Beneil Dariush, who we're about to talk about coming out looking like roses in this one, I'd buy that. Like, there's so many options in this weight class for him to fight. I don't think we have to, like, you know, like, say, like, oh, definitively he needs this matchup or needs that matchup. Like, lightweight's got a ton of killers. Match him up with somebody who's interesting to watch him fight, and that's fine. Like, he's one or two away again, and you know, it just takes the one or two right opponents to do it.
Yep, full of killers and savages.
They were on point last night with killer savages.
Man. Now you're saying it. You said it there.
Yeah, well, it was... It was so bad last night. It was so bad.
Jacare, that's because Rogan and DC are very bad together, because DC wants to be his buddy and be cool, and so he just copies everything that Rogan says. So everybody's a savage and a killer and a beast or whatever else you want to say. So, and now it's creeping into Dan. Dan just said killers too, so he's very impressionable. Apparently. All right, here's a fun game. I just looked it up, but we got odds already for – Oliveira versus McGregor. What are the odds? Oliveira, like, what are the odds that who's going to win the fight? Not that the fight takes place, but when they fight, if they fight, what are the odds?
It's crazy that they're offering it on McGregor and not on Poirier.
Yeah. They're offering on Poirier too. That's
okay. So
yeah,
that's
both.
I would say Oliveira is a favorite against Poirier slightly, and a dog against Connor.
Dog against both. Plus 145 versus Connor. So Connor's 165. And he's plus 155 versus Poirier. Poirier's minus 180. So what are your thoughts on those two lines?
I'm a little bit surprised that they had Poirier being a bigger favorite against him. Because I expected Connor to have a skewed line. You'll probably see it get skewed closer to game time. I think Oliveira is a nightmare for Connor McGregor. That's Conor McGregor's worst nightmare right there. Like, if for some reason he happens to get through Dustin Poirier, I could not be more confident that he was not going to take the belt off of Charles Oliveira. Based on what he did to Tony Ferguson. And don't get me wrong, Beneil Dariush just did the same thing. But, like, he also took down Michael Chandler. And he's got one of the best jiu-jitsu games in the sport. Like, there's no reason to think he isn't just going to submit Conor McGregor very fast.
So go get that plus 145 and throw a sub prop on it, and you're laughing.
I would say this though, that fight's not gonna happen. We're gonna talk about Poirier beating him in a second, but that fight's not gonna happen.
Yeah. So is Poirier gonna beat Oliveira?
I'm much more interested in that matchup. I would have to think about it for a little bit, because I haven't really thought too much about it. I do think Poirier's volume and pressure could be a problem. He doesn't ever go to the ground, but I don't know that he would stop Charles Oliveira from taking it there himself. He's not as, you know, like, Chandler's a little reckless on the feet. I don't feel like Poirier has that in him. So, like, that bodes well for Poirier, too. I think if you're making me pick right now, I might pick Poirier, but I'm not real confident about it.
Yeah, Poirier's got the power, too. He's got similar power to Chandler, but much better technique.
It's a composed power. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you've been dancing around the co-main event where Beneil Dariush basically smothered Tony Ferguson for three rounds, blanked him, 3-0, and probably ripped his knee apart, because apparently he said his knee was popping and Ferguson screamed and didn't tap out and the ref didn't stop the fight. So, like Dariush said, every fight can't be about winning a bonus, which is refreshing actually to hear that someone's more interested in actually winning a fight than trying to be a dancing monkey, dancing seal. What analogy am I going for here for the bosses? Dancing bear? Dancing bear. We'll go with that one. Doesn't want to be a dancing bear for Dana White and try to dance around for his supper. Played it smart, neutralized Tony Ferguson, and just whitewashed him.
Yeah, it looked pretty much exactly like what Charles Oliveira did to it, which I don't know if detracts from what Charles Oliveira had done earlier, but it does seem to hint that there's flaws in Tony Ferguson's game, right? Like,
you don't say.
Well, and you know, I think, you know, I was talking to my other co-host, Shockwave.
Please don't mention him here, please.
And he said, Rogan made a good point on the broadcast, which I had apparently missed. Yeah, I know. We never think he makes any good points, but he did. And he said that it seemed like for years, Tony Ferguson's athleticism allowed him to be funky and have gaps in his skill level, right? Like he's clearly does some shit wrong because he likes to be funky and he's always been athletic. And now he's old and those holes just show and the athleticism doesn't pick up for it. And it sort of feels like that happened, right? Like it felt like, I mean, he was going for that funky ass Darius choke. And when he was more athletic and, you know, quicker and faster and better at locking things up, like that weird Darius choke might have worked against Beneil Dariush 5 years ago. And he might have walked out of that fight with us being like, did you see how good Tony Ferguson looked? And he didn't, right? Like he looked bad the rest of the time, but we would remember that. Like you can almost think of that when he fought Edson Barboza. He got bloodied up. Like he got bloodied up pretty bad, looking silly, doing some striking things. And you know, like his very smart, you know, like, or his very athletic build and funky stuff got him out of it. And now it just doesn't anymore. So it's kind of sad when you look back at it. But yeah, I think this is the end of elite Tony Ferguson. I don't think you're going to see him against anybody, you know, looking real good again. And it's kind of sad that he never even got a shot at the Undisputed title in all that time.
Right. He did have the fake belt for a while, but that's basically like one of those wrestling belts that you can order for your kid. He didn't have the real belt. He had the interim belt. So that's three straight losses for him. Dana White's talking about how time comes for us all and all this jazz. Do you think he's still probably the most popular guy on the card last night? You could say. I've heard some people argue that. And he's getting lots of traffic on MMA Dash Manifest today. It's basically Oliveira, but then Ferguson's right behind as the most traffic out of Chandler and everyone else on the card. Do you think he gets another kick at the can in the UFC or what?
I undoubtedly think he gets another kick in the can. If you listen to that live crowd, they were booing Beneil Dariush, and not because like who hates Beneil Dariush? He's like the nicest guy on the planet, right? So I think entirely that was because of their love for Tony Ferguson. So I don't think they can not book him again. I do think we're looking at a pretty sizable step down from where he is. I can imagine he's going to plummet in the UFC's official rankings and all that good stuff. I think they got to not book him against all of these wrestlers that exist on the edge of the top 15. Like, please avoid Gregor Gillespie and Islam Makhachev and Diego Fajeda. Like, God, do not book him against one of those guys. You know, like there are some guys, or, you know, Rafael Dos Anjos again. Like, I know that would be a rematch, but, like, that wouldn't go well for him. I'm even questioning whether or not he could beat Kevin Lee at this point, which it seems like a tough thing to say, being that he did win the interim title over him, but I don't think he would beat him now.
There's another fan favorite who's going to lightweight for his retirement match. Would you like to see him fight Donald Cowboy Cerrone for his last match?
I don't hate that. I will say I think Tony Ferguson is still quite a bit better than Cowboy Cerrone, because like he has lost a bunch in a row, but who did he lose to? He lost to Justin Gaethje, he lost to Charles Oliveira, and he lost to Beneil Dariush. Like they're all savages, right? So whereas you're talking about Cowboy Cerrone, and no offense to Alex Morano, losing to Alex Morano, who had just come off of a loss to Anthony Pettis. So like he's losing to guys who we don't consider elite at this point. I'd actually like to see, if I have to book Tony Ferguson right now, thinking about that performance last night, you could book him with any of the guys either just outside of the top 15 or just at the edge of the top 15 who you would deem more striker heavy. Like I wouldn't mind seeing him fight Drew Dober. You know, it seems like kind of a weird booking, but that's kind of where I feel like he's at right now. You know, if you want to go a little higher, Paul Felder, not a bad booking. If Felder wants to step back in there and have more, you know, quote unquote fun fights, Tony Ferguson versus Paul Felder could headline a fight night any day of the week and people would tune in for that.
Yeah, Paul Felder's a killer, so yeah, definitely.
And a savage.
And a savage. All right, well, what about Dariush? He's kind of he's in a good spot for winning as many fights as he has in a row, but he's also kind of in a bad spot in the lightweight division, because mapped out the next two title challengers already, basically, for Oliveira. We got the Gaethje Connor winner, and then the next one probably would be not Gaethje, I'm sorry, Connor, that Dustin guy, Dustin winner, and then what, maybe Gaethje Chandler winner next. So yeah, he kind of could be stuck in a bad spot here. I don't see any title shot for him in the next year and a half, maybe.
And he's no spring chicken either. That's right. Worth noting, bro. Like Benil Dariush, you know, he's even sporting a little bit of grays in there, and in his
more than me even, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, I see people in the rankings that are worth pairing him with, but I can't remember his training situation because. So the one person who instantly jumped out when I was looking at the rankings who would be a really good matchup for him right now is Rafael Dos Anjos, right? Because Dos Anjos come off that win over Paul Felder. But yeah. Are they both Kings MMA guys?
Yeah, I think so. Last I heard they were, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know that Rafael Dos Anjos is still at Kings. I feel like
yeah, I'm not sure.
I feel like he left there because if I remember correctly, after his last win, he did not have Cordero in his corner. Which would be a really weird move if he was still at Kings MMA. If they aren't still together, that to me is a really smart matchup because they both just beat like some pretty good guys, right? Dos Anjos just beat Paul Felder and he just beat Tony Ferguson, and they're looking good in need to jump up the division, but at the same time they need something more than what they currently have. So you know that to me is a good pairing.
Dariush, basically, he's never headlined an event, I don't think, has he? So he's basically
I can't imagine, mostly just because he's like a guy who, I mean, I don't think people think of him and think he sells well, right?
Yeah.
Like he doesn't strike me as a guy who, like, people are clamoring to see.
But at this point, I would say he's basically a fight night headliner those performances, so yeah. So,
other than the fact that they usually just want to put a heavyweight main event on most of them.
That's true. He's always reminded me of Musasi, Gegard Musasi.
Yeah,
just by the look and the nonchalance in the cage and whatnot. So he's, I decided to throw that out there. And he's not that old. He's only 32. He looks a lot older than he is.
That is very shocking because I think he was sporting some grays in there this past weekend. And, put the intern on it. It does appear that Dos Anjos is no longer with Kings MMA.
It could be a grudge match.
2017, and he started his own gym and also cross-trains with Evolve MMA. So,
it could be a good grudge match there then.
Yeah, it does appear he has moved on, and whether or not he's still friendly with Dariush obviously could throw a wrench into that, but... That sort of matchmaking makes sense now that we had the intern figure that out.
Yes.
Thank you, intern.
Does he still have a mustache? Can you answer? Can the intern answer that?
I cannot confirm or deny that. I think we should probably have to call him. It looks like if I'm snooping around on his Instagram, he does not.
Oh, well, I'm not interested in that fight anymore then. So,
Hashtag mustache game.
Hashtag mustache, exactly. All right, let me, before we go on, let me tell you about something very important. Roman, look, no one's perfect. Even the best baseball players strike out with the bases loaded. The best golfers sometimes three-putt with the tournament on the line. So if you feel like you come up short in the bedroom sometimes, it's perfectly okay. But if it's bothering you, there are options. Go to getroman.com/SGP now. With Roman, you can get free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with two-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to getroman.com/SGE and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving home. Complete an online visit today to connect with the doctor and take care of it. So go to getroman.com/SGP now to get $15 off your first month. Look, there's a straightforward way to take care of your ED. Get roman.com/SGP and get started now and get $15 off your first month of treatment. All right. So all we've talked about is lightweights. This was a lightweight heavy card. I don't know. Is there really much to say about the next fight? Two flyweights who fought at bantamweight, Rogerio Bonturin and Matt Schnell. Sucks because Schnell was my lock and he lost. Bonturin came in overweight and he won, which goes against all what my stats say. So basically, it was a bad beat all around for me. Do you have much to say about this fight? Really?
I will just say it continues to annoy me that Matt Schnell, who is by far a much better grappler than he is a striker, continues to try to implement a strike-first game plan.
Well, he is Danger. Maybe he's trying to live up to his nickname.
Do you know that they just released one, but there were at least three Dangers in the UFC, including two on this card. There were two Dangers on
this
card.
Gina Danger Mazzani, who broke our hearts also.
Which, both of our locks were Dangers. Maybe that's the worst problem.
Yeah, and they broke our hearts.
Neither of them were very dangerous.
No, not at all. Whatever. Do we have much else to say about that? No.
No, okay. I don't. I think he made a bad choice not trying to grapple more, and maybe the striking of Bontorin didn't allow him to grapple more. But, if he continues with that game plan where he's like, I'm learning that my hands are very good and I'm going to use them more, I think this is going to be his ceiling. Like, his ceiling is losing to guys like Rogerio Bontorin or Kai Kara France or stuff like that, because he's not as good of a striker as them, and he needs to go to where he's best.
And it's not great for Bontorin either, coming missing weight at a weight class above the class that you want to compete in normally. I know it was short notice fight, but still, he basically came in 11 pounds heavier than he normally would have. I thought I heard he was like 160. He's 165, or he was 165 before this, which is insane.
Holy
considering
hell.
He's a. But I hear things that may not be true, so could
that's,
be hashtag.
That's very big.
Yes, that is very big. Do we have to talk about this fight? This one. This was a hashtag stop the steal. Women's flyweight, Caitlin Chookagian versus Vivian Aharujo, as they were saying on the broadcast last night. Yeah, this was a typical Caitlin Chookagian win, where she shouldn't have won, but she won because she looks like she's doing more in the cage. And MMA decisions, if you go on there...
I've got it pulled up already. Don't
go
worry.
On there. Everyone's... Not everyone, but most people are picking Rujo to win that fight, which we also did, which would have put us at 6-6, which would have put us closer to breaking even. Money-wise, also, she was a plus 115 dog. It would have put Dan right about breaking even. And she clearly, I thought, won that fight. She clearly won the first two rounds, but no, someone had Chookagian waiting. Two people had Chookagian waiting in the second round, right? And
first of all, one judge had Chookagian winning every round.
Yeah.
And then all three judges gave her the second.
Which is insane. Because
this wasn't even a split, right? That's right.
Yep.
This was a unanimous decision. And when they read 30-27, I was like, wait a second, that means Chookagian had to have won. Because Chookagian clearly won the third. She won the third in a very convincing fashion.
She actually pieced her up. It wasn't just like striking for striking's sake. She actually did some damage.
Right.
You don't see her do very often.
No, I think the reason is because she went in there thinking she had lost rounds one and two. And clearly her coaches had told her precisely that, which is it's very bizarre to me. It brings up lots of great questions about open scoring, which, you know, everybody's all about open scoring and chats about it all the time. I have love and hate moments about it, but this would have been one that very clearly altered the state of the fight if we had known going into the last round that one judge had already given it to Chookagian and Arroyo needed to stop, and then the other two had it that she just needed to win the round. So bizarre scorecard for me. I think 30-27 is egregious, but I will say, now looking at MMA decisions, it is only 10-7 as far as the media was concerned. So it was closer than I remembered when I was watching, because, you know, there are even some people who I respect who did say Chookagian won, including Sean Sheehan, who I generally am right about on with him, and Joe McDonough, who's a guy who I like. He gave it to Chookagian too, so... I disagree, but, what a weird scorecard, 30-27. Yeah.
I demand justice regardless, Dan. I demand justice.
I like your demands for justice.
we started off with a banger. Not surprising, this fight was a banger. This was, I don't know why, I don't think I picked this for fight of the night in the pick'em contest I run on MMA-Manifesto, but I believe I said on the last podcast that this one could be a fight of the night.
It was very clearly going to be it for me right from the beginning.
Yeah, Edson Barboza, of course, we're speaking of, versus Shane Burgos, which I got wrong, Dan got right. It was one of the craziest knockouts you're ever going to see. Burgos is too tough for his. He almost tricked his body into thinking that he wasn't knocked out. And it worked. It worked for a good, 5 seconds. He tricked himself into thinking he was not knocked out.
It was a really long time. It felt really long.
And then all of a sudden he just collapsed it was like he had a heart attack or something. He just collapsed.
He backpedaled too. I think the backpedaling is what freaks me out because he stayed in there and bounced on his toes like 3 or 4 more times. And then he was like, oh no. And he backpedaled like he was hurt. And I was like, how did it take you that long to know you were hurt? Yeah.
Smashed against the cage.
Have you heard what he said, too?
No.
He said he remembers all of it and he was conscious the whole time.
Yeah.
Which to me is even crazier. Like that seemed like something crazy was going on with his brain. And then he was like, my legs just felt like they stopped working and my limbs were going away. And
that's
like,
more.
That's nuts.
I'm doing a bad job. I'm interrupting you, but that's more like. You see that with body shots, like liver shots. You see, it takes a while for it to get to the brain that it's time to go night-night. But, it was wild. But the fight was very good. Both guys looked great. Burgos looked tough. Barboza was clearly the better man of the two. And the speed and the power, everything is there for him at featherweight. Now he's got the weight cut down, it seems, and he's got a new contract, and it seems the future is very bright for him. At featherweight, but both guys looked very good, and there was a very, very fun fight. Do you want to book Barboza somewhere? It looks like I'm checking. I have performance rankings on my website, MMA-manifesto.com. It looks like he's jumping. He was at 18th heading into here. With this big win, he plus a knockout win, he's back. He's into the top 10. He's up to like number 8, just ahead of Dan Ige, below Ryan Hall. Do you want to fantasy book him?
Yeah, I want to see him against another one of the good boxers in this division.
Right.
So I have a slew of different possible options here, but the two that stick out if you don't book them against one another already are Calvin Kattar. I think him versus Calvin Kattar would be really fun. And if he can't get that Calvin Kattar fight, maybe Calvin's still banged up. I know he's taken a long time to heal from that beatdown he took. Giga Chikadze is such a fun fight.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
I mean, like, that would be just amazing. Because basically what I think he fought is, and in no disrespect to Shane Burgos, is kind of like the poor man's Giga Chikadze or the poor man's Calvin Kattar. Like, I said in the breakdown and why I took Edson Barboza is that, like, it seems like Shane Burgos is a really good boxer when he can box people who are not also elite-level boxers, right? Like, he is a better boxer than all of the grapplers and by far a better boxer than all of the grapplers he's going to fight. But when he fights somebody who also specializes in the same thing as him, he struggles. So I want to see Edson against a guy who's willing to go in there with a guy like Edson and crack a little bit, but also be a little bit more technical. And I think Calvin Kattar and Giga Chikadze bring precisely that, which is, I mean, that's what I want to see Edson Barboza against. I don't want to see him yet against, like, oh, can Dan Ige take him down again? Because that's what Dan Ige did the first time. Or, oh, you know, what is, I guess there's not a lot of grapplers in this division, which is kind of fun. Maybe Bryce Mitchell, but yeah, he's probably above Bryce Mitchell's level now, or Brian Ortega, or, I just want to see him with somebody who's going to box with him.
A savage. Put him with
a
savage.
Yeah, I want to see him with a savage or a beast.
And stick him at the that's another possible, maybe co-main event on a fight night, but maybe main event.
I think Edson Barboza versus Calvin Kattar would main event.
Yeah, it's true.
Giga Chikadze might not have the name recognition yet, but I could see those other two. I would love to see 5 rounds of it.
I don't know if I really want to see, for Kattar's health, I don't know if I want to see him fight Barboza next.
I do have to say, every single time I fantasy book somebody against Calvin Kattar, which happens more often than you would think, I pause afterwards and I'm like, actually, I don't want to see him fight anybody for like another year until his brain is all healed because he took such a beating.
Dan's a weird, weird guy.
I don't want to see Calvin Kattar get hurt.
But you just admitted to fantasy booking Calvin Kattar more often than you should. yep. You admitted to pictures of guys' junk on your phone.
Not pictures of their junk. Pictures of them getting hit in the junk.
that's more like a BDSM or whatever you people call it type of thing. So anyhow, that's the main card. Let me tell you about the last couple of our awesome sponsors that keep us in your ear holes, and then we will rip through the prelims and get you ready for another fight card this week. So UFC rolls on. Underdog Fantasy, we'll talk about first. If you haven't played an Underdog Fantasy, you have to check out their Fantasy Best Ball. Those tournaments are some of the best around. That includes their Best Ball Mania 2 tournament, where you can win $1 million. It still is not written properly, and I'm stumbling all over it. Plus, you can play a number of games involving parlay and player props for MLB, the NBA, and more. They also have a special NBA playoffs best ball tournament coming up as well. Go to underdogfantasy.com and use promo code SGPN. And don't forget to enter the Best Ball Mania 2 tournament for your chance to win $1 million. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code SGPN. And we're also sponsored by Odds Jam. If you're a sharp, you can be smart too. A sharp or a smart better, you need to sign up with Odds Jam. Odds Jam does your line shopping for you, finding the best prices in all bets, including player props. Odds Jam even provides arbitrage opportunities where you can bet on both sides of a line at two different shops to guarantee a profit. Odds Jam also tailors itself to whatever betting markets you're currently in. Dominate the marketplace with Odds Jam. Sign up at, you probably could guess, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/oddsjam and use promo code, you can guess again, I'm sure, SGP, and you get 5% off. So that's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/oddsjam, promo code SGP for 5% off. And I just realized the part in the Roman now that I usually stumble over. I didn't stumble over this week. Hooray. The getting started part, I always mess up on, and I didn't. So this is maybe mediocre with picks, but that I'm bringing it when it comes to ad reads. All right. Prelims were very exciting. Also, this top to bottom, this was a good card. We only had five fights went to decision. None of them really were boring. So the headliner of the prelims was a middleweight bout. We pretty much already talked about this. Andre Munoz versus Ronaldo Jacare Souza. Munoz claims that he's a better grappler than Souza, and he actually proved that he was, or at least he was in this match. They called Souza a savage because he got his arm broken in a jiu-jitsu tournament, and he just tucked it into his belt and kept fighting. Well, that was not an option here. He got his arm broken again. His humerus got broken. Dan did not like my joke about humerus not being funny, but it's not funny that he broke his humerus and that we all got to hear it and see it multiple times. But this is more about Andre Munoz looking fantastic against Ronaldo Jacare Souza.
He's looked phenomenal many times in a row now. Like, I think underratedly, this, and don't get me wrong, a lot of people thought he was going to win this fight, right? We picked against him because, I don't know, nostalgia. I'm going to blame nostalgia. But, like, this is his third win in a row in the UFC. You could also include the fact that he was on Contender Series twice, once on the Brazilian version, once on the American version. And he armbarred Bartosz Fabinski, which, like, don't get me wrong, Fabinski had been losing once in a while by submission, including two or three.
That the guy you wanted to fight?
It's not the guy I wanted to fight. He is the guy who I said I wasn't afraid of his boxing, which you like to interpret however you want. But back to the actual point at hand, low key, Andre Munoz is like a threat at middleweight right now.
He's a savage.
Yeah, he's definitely a savage.
Yeah, no, he looked fantastic in that fight. All right, first of all, that's Jacare. We're going to see him again. He's 41. I think he makes about, like, according to MMA-Manifesto.com, he makes about, like, 210,000, over 200,000 per fight. He's 41. He's lost, what, four fights in a row, five of six. Are we going to see him again? Or, is the UFC, like, Dana White not even a savage enough to cut a guy while he's got a broken arm? Like, I don't know if the UFC is even low enough to do that, but is he going to fight again in the UFC?
I don't think so. I think he is going to fight again, but I don't think he's going to fight again in the UFC. Like, that many losses in a row, that amount of money he's making, and I don't know if you've noticed, it seems to be a thing that the UFC does right before they're about to cut these guys, that they put him against a young up-and-comer and are like, here's your chance again. You know, like, JDS fought Surreal Gain. You could say the same thing about some of the Overeem's opponents and stuff like that. They just, like, they're like, we're going to let you fight somebody way down. Because then if they feel like cutting you afterwards, they can say, well, you know,
you only beat, you know, like they did with Anthony Pettis, where they just let him walk. Well, you only beat Alex Morano, and it's not a big deal. And if they lose, you're like, well, they fucking lost to Alex Morano, so like, who's not even ranked at this point, so it's time for him to go. And it felt like this matchmaking was trying to do that to Jacare, and to get his contract off the books. And I think Mooney's succeeded in getting it off there. That being said, I think he's tailor made for either a Bellator or a PFL or a, you know, ONE FC, or, you know, I could see any of those people snatching him up to get a little name recognition on it. Ryzen, he could fight for Ryzen a couple of times.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying about the veterans. They kind of give them enough rope to hang themselves, and then they basically fire themselves by losing these fights. They've been trying to do that to your boyfriend Andre Arlovsky for years, and
he's not going anywhere.
Nope, he is not. Do you have any fun matchups for Muniz, or is he not high enough in the rankings in the stratosphere yet for you to have anything fun for him?
I actually think he should be fighting a ranked opponent next. You know, like I don't know whether or not these guys are booked next, but like either Omari Akhmedov or Brad Tavares would be good opponents for him.
Sure.
Both guys stuff takedowns at a high enough rate that they're like interesting for him to have to strike with, but both guys like occasionally give up a takedown, and that could be bad for them. I mean, like, if you wanted to boost up Andre Muniz fast, you just give him Kevin Holland and let him submit him instead.
All right.
But like those two would both answer a question and be good matchups.
Brad Tavares seems to be a guy that you fantasy book often also. He's come up a few times.
He's just like the generic – I feel like he's create a fighter one on like if you had a UFC video game, right? Like,
true.
Like tell me what Brad Tavares is really good at.
Being a savage.
He's not basically. Even a savage.
No, he's not. He doesn't finish people or anything.
Yeah, he doesn't finish people, but it also like he doesn't go out on his shield in a way where he gets finished either. Like he hung around with Ida Sanya for a whole fight, but he also hung around for a whole fight with Tiale Slates. Yes. And he hung around for a whole fight with Robert Whittaker starched him. Right, Robert Whittaker knocked him out. Am I remembering that right?
I don't know. I'm just amazed that you remember all this stuff. Yeah, I was going to say, but
he lasted like a whole fight with Yoel Romero, but then also won a split decision over Kyle Magalhaes. So like he's just like one of those guys who is going to go the distance and look bad in good situations and good and bad situations, which is why like he's a good measuring stick, right? Like that lets you know if Andre Muniz is a guy or he's like, you know, he's Kyle Magalhaes, you know, who is no longer in the UFC.
Listen to all these obscure references, man.
Kyle Magalhaes. Fun fact, this is a Kyle Magalhaes story.
Nerd time.
Kyle Magalhaes was the corner in the last jiu-jitsu match I had, the cornerman for the other guy in my jiu-jitsu match.
And who won, Dan?
Me, of course.
Unbelievable.
I won by and grappling fans out there can cast their scorn down upon me after they hear this. I won by omoplata wrist lock, and everybody loves a good wrist lock.
Oh my gosh, really? Unbelievable. Listen to Dan. All right, boom, boom, boom. What else we got? Lando Groovy Venata won a weird split decision against Mike Grundy. Someone had Grundy winning every round. Someone had someone had Venata winning every round, and then someone had Venata winning two out of the three rounds. So, I think the right answer was Venata winning two of the three rounds.
Yeah, I actually wouldn't disagree. And don't get me wrong, I picked Grundy and I like Grundy and I've interviewed Grundy. And I think I gave Venata all of them. I actually don't think that scorecard was wrong. Grundy getting all of them was very wrong. I could see you giving Grundy maybe, I think maybe the third, if I'm remembering correctly, but definitely not more than that. And I think I gave Venata all of them in real time.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. All right. What else we got? Oh, yeah, we should talk
you
about
this. You want to skip this one?
Jordan Wright, Beverly Hills Ninja, TKO Jamie Pickett. Pickett was grabbed, but had him up against the cage. He started nailing him with elbows, so Pickett decided to get out of there. And he got knocked out by the Beverly Hills Ninja.
Yeah, this is a real knockout for Jordan Wright, and I've talked bad about him for enough that I have to issue an apology.
Because this, he actually looked good in air this time. I'm not sure the level of Jamie Pickett yet that I'm ready to be convinced that it's a super big win for Wright, but he looked good enough that, like, I can no longer just say he's a massive can crusher. I can passionately pick against him next time he fights, but I'll have to wait a little bit for that.
Yep. And then a match that Dan got right and I got wrong, women's flyweight. I should have gone with the stats where Shevchenko loses every other fight. Andrea Lee put Antonina Shevchenko in a triangle for basically the whole second round and finally got her to tap with, 8 seconds left.
Yeah, she looked great there, too. Both in the different adjustments she was trying to make, changing angles, pulling the arm one way so that she could land elbows, pulling the arm the other way. Also, did her arm snap, too? It looked like it was at least hyperextended.
Hyperextended, yeah. Yeah,
hyperextended. It was pretty gnarly. I kind of appreciated that fight. That Lee looked really good, and I will say this about Lee too, is that if you go back and look at her record, she's got some finishes, but she hasn't had a ton in the UFC. Now that I'm looking actually. Put the intern on it. She hasn't had any in the UFC. So she was a finisher outside the UFC, but like she hasn't had any finishes in it. And that to me was like, that was a big moment for her. Like not only did she look good, she looked good against a good opponent. She looked good against a good opponent who has finishes. Like that was a big fight for her. And I think, you know, having a bunch of losses in a row, she was, you know, pretty close to becoming irrelevant in that division. And that one really changed the whole story on Andrea Lee.
Okay, so then we'll move on to the early prelims. Another fight I don't want to talk about, but I guess we will. Dan had me sold on Gina Mazzani and how much of a savage she is at women's flyweight, and she got pieced up in the second round by Priscilla Cachoeira, and yeah, total dominant striking performance by Cachoeira after Mazzani was dominating her with the grappling in the early stages of the fight.
Yeah, I think Mazzani, and here's the part I'm a little bit concerned about. I think Mazzani looks so good in there in the first round. She got pieced up a little bit in the second round, couldn't seem to get her grappling going, and that is a concern when anybody drops weight classes, right? Like, I'd been pretty high on her ability to move down, and it seemed like she did in the right way and with a nutritionalist, but, you know, it's not that she's old, right? She's only like 32 or something like that, or 33 maybe, but it is a little bit alarming that her second cut down to 125, she seemed tired in the second round, or at least beat up.
Yeah.
And you know, props to Cachoeira, who was 0-3 in the UFC at one point, and then since then has really done some impressive work with her hands. You know, between the knockout of Shayna Dobson and this TKO, like, I mean, she looks so good with her hands. So I'll be interested to see what they do with her next, because she's actually pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, no doubt. We were surprised that she was getting another fight after what she's how she looked at the starting of her career, even though she was fed Valentina Shevchenko on what, short notice, I think that fight was. That wasn't very fair in her debut, but they apparently knew what they were doing, the powers that be, because she's looked like a world beater the last two fights.
Yeah. She looks like she could be pretty close to a ranked opponent at this point. Like, it's a shorter division. I wouldn't be surprised if they booked her with somebody.
Yeah, because she's looking like a killer. So there you go. We got this one right. Featherweight Tucker Lutz looked very good in his UFC debut against Kevin Aguilar, the Angel of Death, who's probably, that will be the death of his UFC career after, I think he's lost, what, 3 straight, 4 straight? He's lost a lot.
He's lost a mess in a row. And I will say this, it's 4 straight. Danny Gay, Zabira Tuhugov, Charles Rosa, Tucker Lutz. And I will say this about Lutz. He looked exactly the way we thought he was going to, right?
Mm-hmm.
The type of guy who does not get a contract off of Dana White's Contender Series, somehow did anyway, and just did a damn good job.
Yep, exactly. He did a damn good job. And then the opener, Christos Giagos, Bravo choked Sean Soriano. to sleep, actually, in the second round. So we got that one right too. So we started off so nice, and then like I thought we were gonna get, the Mazzani fight right too. I thought, okay, we're gonna go 3-for-3 on the early prelims, and then the second round happened in that fight, but and things, the wheels fell off. But yeah, we got the Giagos and the Lutz fights right at least.
I think we might have called submission on Giagos too.
Did we or did you? I don't know. Maybe.
I think we.
Oh, that sounds like something you do.
I think we. I'm going to say we.
Yeah, okay, fine. We. Perfect. I'll take credit for that. I'll take credit for actually getting something right. So that concludes UFC 262. Fun fight card. Not so fun for our pocketbooks and our picks, but it was fun. And it was in the Toyota Center. 16,005 were in attendance. Over $4 million gate. $4,110,000, and the bonuses, which Tony Ferguson talked the UFC up into giving $75,000 bonuses this week instead of $50,000, and the UFC made sure everyone, they advertised that to show what a great organization they are. They definitely ran that down our throats that they were giving away some extra money, this billion-dollar corporation. So Edson Barboza, Shane Burgos got 75 G's for fight of the night. You can't argue after that fight they had. And then Charles Oliveira, he can't argue about him, getting an extra 75 grand. And then Christos Giagos got the 75 grand too. But there was a lot of, like I said earlier, a lot of finishes. So there's a lot of people in the running for those awards. Which brings us to this coming week. We got a bantamweight battle, Rob Font versus former champ Cody Garbrandt. Is the main event. This is going down from the UFC Apex in Las Vegas. The co-main event at this point looks like women's strawweight, Carlos Esparza versus
Yan Xiaonan, my favorite name to say, and one of my favorite strawweights to watch.
There you go. And we got lots of chunky guys on this card too. Justin Toffa is fighting Jared Vandera. Ben Rothwell is fighting Chris Huggy Bear Barnett.
Dude, I could not be more excited that Huggy Bear is A, in the UFC, and that we're going to get a chance to talk about. He's every chump, everyone out there, if you're on my hashtag chunky guys wavelength, and you're here waiting for the chunky guys to throw down, this is the god of chunky guys. Just so you know, start YouTubing him so that when you listen to our episode come out Wednesday night, so that you're on board already, because it's time to get on that hype train.
There you go. Yeah, he's what? Like, he's listed at 5'9", 287, I saw him listed at. So, but he was like a super heavyweight at 5'9"?
I think he weighed at 310 for a fight one time.
No way. Unreal.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
He kind of looks like Mark Henry, too. He reminds me of the world's strongest man, except a lot heavier.
He's got a slightly different build, I think.
Right. Yeah, a little bit different. And then what else do we have here? Anything else worth mentioning? Yeah, there's a lot of good fights on this card. Felicia Spencer's back against Norma Dumont. Jack Hermanson, Edmund Shabazian. So this is a very good fight night card coming up this week.
And we're also going to get the return of my plus 275 underdog, Lupita Godinez, is stepping in on short notice. She's actually going up two weight classes to step up on short notice and fight Sarah Alpar. I'm guessing she's going to be a pretty sizable underdog, and you may just want to tune in and find out if I'm going to brag about it for an extended period of time.
Here we go. So definitely, you are so good at teasing these listeners' ear holes and making them come back for more and more and more. Thank you for everyone for coming to our feed, by the way. This last episode was our most listened to one on our new feed, so you must be getting my hints that you should subscribe to the MMA Gambling Podcast feed, because we're not going to be on the SGPN main feed for much longer. They want us out on our own because we are apparently the black sheep of the family. We talk about fighting and stuff. So, but anyhow, we still will be part of the fam. We're just going to have our own feed. We do have our own feed, so make sure you follow us there. What else? What other homework should I give our listeners? We'll be back, Wednesday night. So in the meantime, go to MMA-manifesto.com, obviously. Read all my stuff there, all our lead-up articles to next week's card or this week's card if you depending on when you listen to this, go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com, obviously. Read all the good stuff. Go to the BetSGPN part there. We got a lot of good odds and discounts and promo codes and whatnot for you. Listen to all the podcasts. Every podcast they have on the network, you have to listen to. What other homework? I guess you can listen to Dan's podcasts, Prelim Picker, and the Top Turtle MMA podcast, who he will have on this week as guests.
Yancy Medeiros, I know, will be one of them because I recorded him for last week. He wound up getting pushed when Alex Morano dropped by. So we still have that interview with Yancy Medeiros. And the second one is currently TBD.
Oh, well, TBD just headlined a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah,
TBD
he did. Versus, yeah. Look good in there, exciting. Too. Look
exciting.
Good.
what else is there? Oh, you should follow us on Twitter, obviously. Jeff Fox Writer, Gumby Vreeland. I think that's it for the homework. So I guess until next Wednesday, class dismissed.